Have you ever thought that maybe we should have left things alone? Because surely you have heard the phrase, if it's not broken, then don't fix it. Well, these are the sorts of things I think about and the sorts of questions I tend to ask when I look at things going on in our modern world. Now, granted, our advances in technology have proven to be to our advantage in many ways, but there is always a price to pay for that convenience. And such is the case with farming. In the last week's episode, I discussed the reason we have factory farming, but at the same time, we are destroying the natural foundation of the things we need to survive. So this week, I'm going to take a look at something entirely different, an alternative to factory farming. So please join me for episode 152.
Welcome to the Adventures in Sustainable Living podcast. Your host has lived an off-grid, sustainable lifestyle for over 20 years. His homestead is run on solar energy. He has an earth shelter greenhouse and produces much of his own food. And all of this takes place in the middle of the forest in Colorado. Now, let's join Patrick, the man that not only teaches the skills of sustainable living, but lives that life every day.
And welcome back, everyone, to the Adventures in Sustainable Living podcast. This is your host, Patrick, and this is episode 152, which is called Regenerative Agriculture Explained. But before we get to that, let's first talk about the good news story of the week. And you may not know it, but cotton is by far the most popular fabric in the world, and the advantage is that it is all natural. It's biodegradable, and it is renewable. But the challenge with cultivating cotton is the high use of pesticides and runoff from these pesticides, of course, as well as the fertilizers and minerals from cotton fields contaminates rivers, lakes, wetlands, and underground aquifers. But there is actually good news. Over the last 10 years, the cultivation of cotton has become far more sustainable, and this organization called the Better Cotton Initiative, which is a nonprofit governance group, promotes better standards in cotton farming practices in 21 different countries. So just recently, they published their annual impact report, which highlights significant progress in their pilot projects in India. And Better Cotton tracked the performance of Indian farmers from 2014 to 2022 and found that the overall use of pesticides had decreased by 53% and water usage has dropped by one-third. And additionally, almost 1 million farmers saw their cost of production decrease by almost 16%, which means, of course, their lives improved just a little bit. And so the world takes another small step toward sustainability. And I thought that this story was appropriate considering I have focused the last couple of episodes on agriculture and food production. So I do have to share with you, since I made the promise to bring everyone a little bit of good news every week, it's sort of becoming my favorite part of producing every week's episode because I search around and look for nothing but good news and inspiring stories, and it actually gives me a little bit of personal uplifting, and I hope it does the same for you. So now let's move on to this week's episode, which focuses on regenerative agriculture. And now, from what we know about the evolution of civilization, there was a point in time when people existed in small nomadic bands, and they survived simply by hunting and gathering. Now, it's generally agreed that humans began farming about 10 to 12,000 years ago, and although there does not appear to be any specific timeline, the domestication of animals was approximately in that same era. And so it was the domestication of animals and the development of agriculture is what helped to ensure a stable food supply. So that said, it's worth noting that at this point in time in history, it's estimated that our global population ranged somewhere between 2 million and 15 million people. And even though global population began to increase rapidly, for hundreds of years, agriculture was essentially on a small local scale. And however, the Industrial Revolution brought about some great change in many ways, and that includes the production of food. New advances such as the seed drill and what's called the Dutch plow increased productivity. And it really truly was the rising population and the availability of abundant cheap labor that drove the Industrial Revolution, and more people began seeking jobs in factories. Fewer men focused on agriculture, and at the same time, the mechanization of farming, the production of chemicals, pesticides, and the invention of large tractors made it possible to farm larger tracts of land with a much smaller workforce. So modern agriculture is simply the consequence of both some social and technological changes that began in the 1800s, much of which was the result of the Industrial Revolution. And the end game here was simply to increase crop yields for a growing human population, and that was accomplished by applying fossil fuel energy, mechanization, advanced crop breeding methods, and the use of artificial compounds such as fertilizers and pesticides. And simply for the sake of reference, the population of the world right in the middle of the Industrial Revolution was approximately 1 billion people. But you know, what I always have a tendency to do is I look at our modern world and I think back at how things were when I was growing up. Because our lifestyle certainly involved a lot of physical labor due to the work that was needed to keep the farm operating properly. But thinking back, it always seemed very simple and basic, although not always easy. And maybe my perception is the result of being young and naive, but there is no doubt that we were self-sufficient in a lot of ways. Because we raised a tremendous amount of our own meat, we had chickens for both meat and eggs, we had a large garden that provided most of our vegetables. We had numerous apple and nut trees, and we purchased additional vegetables at the farmer's market. And we also went on fishing trips regularly and even foraged for wild berries. And the blackberries were always my favorite. But you know, underneath it all, we never really worried about the source of our food because it was us. We never really worried about the price of food because we supplied most of it ourselves and the price was our physical labor. We never really gave the first thought of supply chain disruption because everything was local. We never really gave the first thought of what was going on in China, Ukraine, Chile, Cuba, Russia, or any other country for that matter. And now all it takes is one war in one small country to completely disrupt the global economy. And yet again, I look at our modern world and find myself thinking that we are truly getting it all wrong. But what is fascinating to me is that so many people these days are taking note of what's going on and realizing we need to make some changes. And people are finally starting to realize that perhaps the old way of doing things may not have been so bad after all, because farmers and landowners are completely re-evaluating what it means to care for their land, and land management practices are now turning from simply making a profit to finding ways to care for the local community through farming practices that nurture and sustain the land. And one of the best approaches to sustainable land management is what is called regenerative farming, which is a philosophy of farming. It's really more of a holistic approach, and it involves looking at how all aspects of agriculture are not only interconnected, but they also play a part in the surrounding ecosystem. And unlike our traditional farming, regenerative farming is meant to actually restore the soil. And these practices focus on ecosystem health and address any sort of imbalances. And it is a system of agriculture that provides for people through food production while improving the surrounding area of land so that it can be used for future generations. So in other words, we are looking at a means of sustainable food production instead of simply seeing it as a supply chain. And it's interesting to note how regenerative farming is also structured to support the three pillars of sustainability, which is people, planet, and profits. And unlike conventional agricultural systems, this form of agriculture is based on some very important principles. Things such as prioritizing soil health, reduced dependence on pesticides and chemical fertilizers, and developing relationships with local communities so that there is a positive impact on the local economy. But there are also some ecological benefits. It actually produces healthier crops, and land quality is improved due to increases in soil health and fertility. It supports biodiversity and reduces water pollution. And just as importantly, this system of agriculture also helps to address the long-standing social inequalities and injustices that are historically present in our modern agricultural systems. But I also find it quite interesting to know that the food that we eat today is actually far less nutritious than the food that we were eating 50 years ago. And this is because our soils are depleted of vital nutrients, which should be in the food that we eat. And regenerative agriculture is a means of restoring that as well. So what exactly is regenerative agriculture? Well, there are five basic principles, and interestingly enough, these are things that you can do at home on a small scale in your own garden. And principle number one is referred to as soil armor. And what this means is simply protecting the soil from the damaging effects of sun and water and wind, because intense sunshine actually tends to dry the soil, of course. It elevates the temperature and kills off all the vital little organisms. And keeping the soil covered moderates that temperature and prevents this from happening. And soil covering also aids in water retention and mitigates erosion that's caused by hard rains and flooding. And this covering also mitigates the drying effects of wind. Because all it takes is a quick little stroll in nature for you to notice that you rarely see bare soil. So keeping the soil covered not only protects it from the elements, but it also suppresses weed growth and the spread of invasive species while providing habitat for beneficial organisms. So on the other hand, if you have ever seen a conventional feedlot, you will obviously take note that it completely destroys the local environment. And principle number two is minimizing soil disturbance. So in order to promote soil health, it is actually important to disturb the soil as little as possible, because soil disturbances such as overuse, overgrazing, and tilling actually destroys soil biology and structure. And by doing so, we also have a tendency to release stored carbon. And doing things such as applying synthetic fertilizers and pesticides and antibiotics and fungicides essentially destroys billions of beneficial microbes that live in the soil. And our conventional farming methods routinely destroys the entire soil ecosystem, but regenerative farming limits those disturbances, which allows the soil to build, to grow, and evolve into a complex, self-sustaining ecosystem. And the other principle, number three, is that regenerative agriculture promotes biodiversity. Because it's long been known that the diversity of an ecosystem is actually a protective mechanism, because a diverse population of microbes, insects, plants, and animals increases the health and the resiliency and is the basic foundation for sustainability. And the same holds true for our agricultural systems. Because conventional farming methods destroy all forms of life in order to cultivate one species of plant or animal, and this is often referred to as a monoculture, which simply does not exist in the natural world. Because animals raised like this are routinely given antibiotics, and these medications, of course, can be passed out of their system through fecal material and urine, which of course in turn contaminates the groundwater. And on the other hand, regenerative agriculture mimics the natural world. There's a huge variety of plants and animals and insects, birds and small mammals, and all of which play a unique role in this ecosystem. So instead of destroying everything in favor of one species, there is a diverse population. And the funny thing about this type of system, it's the same thing farmers did prior to the industrialization of agriculture. And it was, in fact, the same way my grandfathers developed their farms. And principle number four is focusing on keeping living plants in the soil as long as possible. Because this is yet another principle that's radically different from our traditional form of monoculture or monocropping. And this form of agriculture often leaves soils completely bare because a crop is out of season. And if green crops are left in the ground, then they're capturing carbon, they're adding nutrients, they're maintaining soil diversity and keeping the soil stable. But this also increases soil fertility so that the fields can support crops and animals for generations to come. And you know, once again, just take a short walk out into nature and take our prairie lands in our country are a perfect example, because there are 60 to 70 different types of native grasses that provide habitat and maintain soil stability and provide forage for grazing animals. And speaking of animals, the last principle, principle number five, is the integration of animals. And as we all know, they provide some natural fertilizer, but they also help to distribute seeds through their manure. They tend to stimulate plant growth and productivity. And because in the absence of animals in an ecosystem, then we have to rely on synthetic inputs in the forms of chemicals that do many of the things that animals do naturally. And as a result of our manipulation, we are, of course, polluting the environment. So there is no doubt that we have altered a tremendous portion of our planet for our own purposes. And much of that alteration has really been related to our take-make-dispose approach to managing many of our own resources, because for the longest time, we have thought of this planet as having unlimited potential that is simply there for our unlimited exploitation. But I am so encouraged to think that people are finally realizing that while many of the resources that we consume are in fact renewable, but they're just not renewable in the lifetime of anyone alive today. And I commonly think back about the family farm, and while not knowing it at the time, these two farms were a perfect example of how agriculture used to be. Farming was done by hand, animals were taken care of manually, the animals were rotated from pasture to pasture, the soil was rarely disturbed. And the only time I remember my grandfather using a tractor was to harvest hay that was grown for feed, And yes, it was a lot of work, but it was also very simple. And it is this very same approach that I have taken toward any development that has been done on the homestead, which is minimal disturbance. Because 95% of the land is still in the same condition it was when I purchased it 27 years ago. And you know, just the other day I was weeding out some really obnoxious invasive weeds, and it just occurred to me that whenever I did any excavation, for the purposes of building the cabins and the barn, the storage shed, and the greenhouse, it was initially the disturbed soil that invited all these invasive, obnoxious weeds. But with repeated weeding, we have actually have a very large patches of grasses with various other species of plants that actually provides year-round food for a variety of animals. And the next major thing I did was I removed a lot of trees, and this was actually a very painful thing for me to do at first, but it was for a good purpose, because I simply had to prevent the excessive shading on the solar array so that we could live off renewable energy. And I also had to back up the tree line a little bit for fire mitigation, because the forest around us is actually very, very thick. But the end result of clearing the trees is we now have a huge variety of shrubs that produce edible fruit. And additionally, new plants and shrubs are moving in that I have never seen grow on the homestead before. And this includes several varieties of flowering plants that supports a lot more bees, and also my favorite little crackheads, which are the hummingbirds. And the additional benefit of this is that it provides even more grazing for some of our favorite animals, such as the deer, elk, and moose. And in fact, just yesterday, I saw a total of 8 moose in less than a day. And once I started noticing the natural and beneficial changes, we decided to try and speed along that process. So we took an inventory of all these new plants that were growing, and we went and found more of them and started transplanting them. And we now have almost zero exposed soil while promoting the growth of a variety of edible plants, both for us and the wildlife. And I guess this is sort of our little version of agroforestry out in the middle of the forest. And now granted, my 46 acres in the middle of the forest is really a tiny speck on the planet. And what we do there is minuscule compared to the immense needs and challenges facing humanity today. But all it would really take to make a significant difference is for each of us to start by doing one simple thing. So for example, if we all decided to plant one tree a month for a year, that would result in almost 95 billion new trees planted over the course of a year. What if we all agreed to drive 10% less for an entire year? And in the US alone, that would save 110 million metric tons of carbon dioxide from going into the atmosphere. And that is the same as taking 28 coal-fired power plants offline for an entire year. What if we all decided to reduce our water usage by 25%, which is entirely possible considering that our average household uses 300 gallons of water a day? So if we reduced our usage by 25%, that means that each one of us would save 27,000 gallons of water in a year. What if we all decided to never use a disposable coffee cup again? Well, that would save wasting 500 billion cups per year that, of course, cannot be recycled. So as you can see, it takes very little change to produce tremendous results. So over the past 3 episodes, I have covered quite a bit of material concerning the source of our food, And I certainly hope by now you can appreciate the value of knowing where your food comes from, how it is produced, and the tremendous impact of simply buying local. Because it is only by having this knowledge that we can begin to make appropriate choices that will eventually force big business to give us even more appropriate choices and more sustainable choices. And that, folks, is how we change the marketplace. Because in my opinion, in our over-exuberance to maximize efficiency in feeding our world, we've just managed to fix something that was never really broken in the first place. And by choosing to live sustainably, supporting local sources of our food, it is possible that we can get back to a point to where our source of food is never even a worry. And in many respects, this is just another example of how we should have stayed with doing things in the simple way instead of being dependent on convenience. Because besides, in my opinion, it always seems that whenever we lean toward convenience, we always give up some small little part of our independence. And as I have said so many times, when someone else is in control of your resources, they are in control of your life. And my response to that is live sustainably and take it back. So for this week, folks, this is your host, Patrick, signing off. I hope you have enjoyed this episode, and I hope you will join me again next week. And until then, always remember to live sustainably, because this is how we build a better future.